Hi there, good to be back with you once again, regular listeners. Welcome, and if you're joining us for the first time, thank you for tuning in. My name is Henrik Palmgren, I'm from Sweden, and this is Red Ice Radio, independent media, pro-European, but anti-EU. And we're doing the job that the government-subsidized media should be doing, which is not only to be honest and sincere about what is happening in the world and tell the truth, but to look out for the interests of the European people, a concept which is so foreign to the establishment that we've forgotten what it's like. Well, if you're interested, you can find out more at redicecreations.com and redicereadio.net. And if you like what we do and want to make sure we can expand in our coverage as we grow, sign up for a membership at redicemembers.com and get full access to our archives. And at the same time, you help to keep us ad-free, which also means that we can remain independent. Thank you so much. Well, we've had another eventful and obviously horrific and tragic weekend. Yet another attack in France. Once again, it happens. And this time, there is a lot of casualties. More bodies washed up dead on the beaches of enforced multiculturalism. We have a two-hour extended segment coming up with Millennial Woes. He's been running the YouTube channel by the same name for about 2 years now. The description on his channel says that he's a Gen X slash millennial Scottish guy pontificating about the world we live in and we are heading towards. And we also have Lana from Radio 314 joining in on the conversation today about what's to come for the future of Europe. Millennial Woes, it's great to finally have you with us. Thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for coming on short notice. Great speaking with you.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
And Lana, thank you for joining us as well.
Good to be here.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, Woes, obviously, you have a channel on YouTube that I hope our audience is familiar with. If not, I do hope that they do get familiar with it. I've been following you regularly for about 5-6 months or so now, and I wanted to ask you some more later about the channel and kind of some of the things that drove you to start it up and whatnot. But I wanted us to go straight into the topic at hand first, obviously, and discuss the attacks in Paris that took place, Friday the 13th of all dates, of course. We don't have to run through all the facts here. People tuning in, I think, will know the story. It's been running on repeat on most media channels now.
You'd struggle to miss it, really.
Yeah, exactly. But let me mention anyway, as of right now, I think about 132 people have been killed, and it was 89 of them at the Bataclan, or however you pronounce that, the theater, with this band called Eagles of Death Metal were playing. It's a group from the U.S., California, but about 352 people were injured. And I think since the 2005 riots in France, which is about 10 years ago now, these kinds of things are developing into a common occurrence, more or less, in France, and soon the rest of Europe as well. It's no longer just riots. It's now mass casualty events. And you had clueless people, young people, at the concert here, probably lefties, most of them, who knows, the thought that this was firecrackers initially going off. I listened to some of the interviews with some of the people, kind of just how the many of the Brits in Tunisia, that hotel earlier this year, same thing there. Many couldn't just kind of comprehend what was happening. They thought it was a game or some kind of practical joke. But anyway, just to round this up a bit of explaining what happened to people, predictably, IS or ISIS or ISIL, whatever you want to call them, took the responsibility, and their motives has allegedly been a retaliation for French involvement in the war in Syria and the Iraq war. And I've even seen people in the alternative media hammering this, that somehow France and the West at large, deserves this because of their involvement. So ISIS, instead of striking, let's say, a government building where the politicians, are housed, who are responsible for pushing involvement in the Middle East against people's will, are placed. They strike a rock concert, a restaurant, and all this kind of nonsense. So it's just utterly, utterly senseless. But what's your initial impression, Woes, of the event, and what did you think when you first heard about it?
Well, I'm at the stage now where I just expect this stuff, and when it happens, I'm not even upset by it. I'm not emotionally affected by it in the sense of getting sad. I just feel angry. I feel angry as soon as I read about it. I just thought, all right, here we go, another one. Why has this been allowed to happen? Why has this been facilitated by the refugee crisis and other things? Why the whole policy of multiculturalism, the very idea of respecting a third world death cult, all of these things that we've been doing for decades and at an accelerating pace and intensity. These things we've been doing, why have we been doing them? And as these events start to happen ever more frequently, like Woolwich, Boston, Madrid, 7/7, 9/11, Charlie Hebdo, why don't we get the message?
Yeah.
I just think it's insane. It's like there's a death wish. But I don't think there is actually a death wish. I think it's always we're always flirting with nihilism and destruction. There's a sense of entrancement or wonder at the idea of being destroyed, and I think that's what's going on. All the people who say that Western civilization should be destroyed, they don't actually mean that, because they love the comfort. Everyone loves the comfort of Western civilization. And so when they say that kind of stuff, it's all LARPing and affectation. And really, it's actually loathsome. It's so insincere. But in the meantime, they do pursue policies that will bring that about. And they are, from a distance, they are fascinated by the idea of the West being destroyed, I think. A lot of leftists. And then another lot of leftists would say that that was just insane. That, of course, the West is never going to be destroyed. And then their crime, their mistake, is to be incredibly complacent. Just head in the sand or head in the clouds, whatever you want. We're basically dealing with people who are either indulgent or just incredibly naive.
Right.
Or some of them are actively malicious. I don't really have much time for any of these people. I don't really respect them. The only ones I have time for are the ones who are naive. And I hope that events like this will open their eyes and force them to take that leap of becoming a horrible person who doesn't like immigration.
Well, on some level, I got to say, I think that many people actually love when this kind of thing happens, because it's a chance for them to show that France and the entire PC pro-multiculturalist monster that it's grown into now can demonstrate how good and tolerant they are. You saw these cliches immediately. It's like, don't let them divide us, or it's like, if you become fearful, the terrorists win, it's like they will never touch on the root of the problem ever. I mean, they won't even recognize the symptom of the problem at this stage and realize that these kinds of things would never occur if we didn't live in this multicultural Europe that we have now, that has been imposed upon the European people against their will. But I think that these kinds of events, it seems to strengthen the national character almost these days. It's like a reinforcement for them that somehow this demonstrates that a weakness within the system has to be kind of patched up with faith or belief in it, just like a religion. And I think it makes a lot of people feel better about themselves. They can signal to each other on Facebook and Twitter of changing their avatar to like the tricolore, the blue, white, and red colors, and to show, see, we're all in this together. Don't let them win,
Yeah, I mean, I remember the lights were lighting up in the buildings, in support of France, but terrorism happens every day in South Africa. No one gives a damn about that. How about the Rotherham rape scandal? No lights were lit up for all those abused and raped children. But for me, what was really striking was watching this religious kind of mind-controlled response. It's been alarming. French people just had over 130 of their mostly young people killed. So instead of being outraged, they're uniting for more multiculturalism, saying more of it is the answer. We just need more of it to bring peace. So they're standing together for all races, but not their own. And then I kept hearing them say, oh, these terrorists are cowards. No, they just shot up a bunch of people and then killed themselves. The cowards are the French who don't shut the borders and clean up their nations, right?
Yeah, I think the idea that these people are cowards is just ridiculous. It's like, it's the same thing when they say, oh, these people are just mad, they're insane. No, they're not insane. They're not insane, they're not mad, and they're not cowardly. What they did is loathsome and terrible, but it takes courage. And
exactly.
As for it being insane or crazy or wild or mad, no, there is a clear, calculated purpose to what they're doing. So they're not mad. And these are just ways for a Westerner to avoid taking it seriously and thinking about it and its meaning. It is silly.
Exactly, yeah.
One other thing I wanted to say earlier, one of these cliches that we're hearing is we mustn't give in to fear. That in itself is indulgent and insincere, that statement. We should be fearful. If you're not fearful, if you're not concerned by this, if this doesn't scare you, then I just don't know what planet you're living on. I mean, I'm not saying that we should live in fear and be trembling, but I'm saying that we should recognize that there is a threat, and because that is the first step to actually dealing with the threat.
Well, now, anybody randomly can be killed anywhere in Europe without warning, right? That's what this implies.
I mean, I know that the leftists would reply, no, we shouldn't be fearful. We should just deal with the threat. But I think that this is all just ways of minimizing it in their heads. No, this is a general thing. We absolutely should fear Islam. You can deal with this terrorist cell and this lone jihadist. What about the whole thing? You know, you can deal with that one, and then there's another one just pops up. Absolutely, we should fear Islam. We should fear Islam because that is the first step towards understanding that we have to respond to it and then devising our response to it.
Isn't this the kind of the social conditioning, right? That on one hand, they show us what ISIS is doing in the mainstream media. They're showing us all these beheadings. They're showing us, whatever you stand on, like 9/11 and all that kind of stuff. It's, you know, was it an inside job or not? I don't want to get into that here. But if we follow through on the official thought, it's, the, you know, Muslims did that. You know, Osama bin Laden did that from a cave in Afghanistan. This is these people's intention. But then they come into our countries, but now you can't be reprehensible about this. Now you can't have fear about it. You can't think about this. You can't treat them differently because that's Islamophobic, right? So you can't have any kind of reaction to it. And I think that this is about developing a kind of schizophrenia to this whole situation, that you can observe something out in the real world that the media has reinforced into you that you cannot recognize or you can't discriminate against them, basically, because that turns you into a racist. So I think it's a way to basically exacerbate the situation and have more and more people not to do anything when these kinds of things occur.
Yeah, I think that schizoid response that they engender, I think it leads to a sort of dysfunction, because the only, when you're seeing something scary, but you're not supposed to be scared of it, the only thing you can do there is sort of crumble, you know, because these are contrary impulses that you're feeling. And I think it just leads to a sort of state of impotence.
Yeah. Now Merkel, she's actually calling for more tolerance towards invaders after the Paris mass killing. I mean, can you imagine? The world just saw the mass killing of Europeans by these invaders, and we are the ones who should be more tolerant, basically ignoring this built-in survival mechanism to defend ourselves from danger. It's like the nerve when Germany is getting the most unchecked hostile invaders. Mm-hmm. So now you're basically supposed to just, you know, pull down your panties and hope no one rapes you and not make any judgments over it, right?
I think what the leftists would say about this, and we're talking about stereotype leftists, obviously, is, okay, there is a threat, but it's okay because it's worth it. Because by dealing with this threat, we allow these people in, and then we control the threat. And of course, they're assuming that we can control the threat, even though we clearly can't, because this thing has just happened. But they'll say, but we control the threat, and in return, we get diversity. And what I always ask is, so what? What is good about diversity? Can you tell me why is it that we should support, that we should be grateful for, that we should celebrate multiculturalism? And I'll tell you what they say. You'll have had this as well, but this is my experience. There are two things that they come up with. The first is we get an incredible range of restaurants, which I think is absolutely pathetic. I think it's just so shallow. I mean,
because we don't know how to cook food in the West.
I hate kebabs.
Yeah, we couldn't possibly cook. I'm lucky. The only foreign food I like is Italian. So, you know, I'm racist even in that way. But it's insane. We don't need them here in order to eat. You know, it's silly. But also the argument itself is just so shallow, because if you wanted to quantify it, how many girls being raped is worth you being able to eat a curry?
Exactly. You know, that's what it comes down to.
I know that there isn't. I know that's a bit fatuous because there isn't a direct statistical relationship. But even so, you are essentially, I mean, it does work out. It is true that they're saying they want, that they're happy to let this stuff happen because in return we get this incredible range of restaurants. It's a phrase I've heard so many times. And then the other argument that they say in favor of diversity is, well, it makes us more understanding of other cultures. And, you know, my response to that is, first of all, I don't think it does. I think that's just made up. I don't think we are more understanding of other cultures by virtue of living alongside them. I don't think that... It sounds like it should work out that way, but I don't think it actually does in real life. And second, well, so what? I mean, we wouldn't need to be understanding of other cultures if they were on the other side of the world where they belong. So it's all nonsense.
Well, this creates hate for other people in other cultures.
Yeah, proximity. Yep. And yeah, that's the phrase, diversity plus proximity equals conflict. And I think it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
I mean, I had an anarchist. I was talking to an anarchist yesterday on Skype, and he's actually agreed with me. I was really surprised. But I'll be putting that up sometime soon. So yeah, those are the two arguments they come up with. And you can beat them. You can defeat those arguments very easily. And then you say anything else. Have you got any other arguments for diversity? And they'll say something like, well, you're just bigoted.
Of course, exactly. But isn't it like the premise change also over time that it's, you know, first they were, you know, guest workers, right? And then they're here because we are not having any babies, allegedly, right? So they're here to kind of, you know, take care of us when we get elderly because we're not having any kids. And then they're refugees and now we're helping them. And then it's, no, they're economic migrants. They want to just have a shot at a better life in the West. And this keeps changing and evolving to whatever they need to say at the time to make sure that it just continues and we will drop our guard and not put up any opposition to it.
Absolutely. The rationale for allowing this and for continuing it changes by the decade, which is interesting. Because I mean, things do change, but still, it's still ultimately the same thing that's happening, which is mass invasion of the West by the Third World. And it is interesting that the rationale continually evolves, and it's always stupid. You know, I mean, it's always some silly thing like that. You know, if there is a population crisis, then the answer to that is very simple and obvious. We need to have more babies, and we should be encouraging that. We should be even incentivizing that. I think the state should be giving couples tax breaks, whatever, stipends, whatever, you know, especially the high IQ couples.
Yeah.
To encourage more people. Because, you know, there is, strange though it seems, there is a shortage of doctors in the West among the white race. And that is ludicrous. I mean, there's absolutely no reason why that should be the case.
Well, I think England, when you go into their hospitals now, is mostly Indian doctors, from what I've heard.
Yes, Pakistanis and Indians.
Wow.
And that is true. I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say it's mostly, but it's probably, well, I don't know, it's about a third, I would guess, off the top of my head. Even that is, I mean, that's amazing.
That's a lot. Yeah.
But that's just off the top of my head. Someone might say that that's completely out of the way. The point is there are a hell of a lot of them. And I think, well, why? Are you seriously telling me that a race like the English cannot produce high IQ people who are capable of doing surgery? It's just ridiculous.
Well, the other reason why we have a shortage of doctors is because all the third world immigrants coming in all need medical care. And it's like our population is tripling, you know.
Indeed.
It's booming, people, so we need more.
People said that. Without immigrants, the NHS would crumble. But the fact is, I mean, well, you know, without all the immigrants, the NHS would have a far easier time.
Exactly.
Apart from anything else, 3% of the Pakistanis in Britain are born with birth defects because of the inbreeding.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, I saw the same thing in Sweden. The few times I visited the hospital, it was full of immigrants every time. It's like it almost felt like they run because it's a thing they take advantage of. I think they're like, oh, it's great, you know, just go to the doctor.
Oh, in America, they call 911 when they're having a baby instead of planning ahead to go to the hospital or having it at home.
Right.
Wow. Oh, God. There you go. Yeah, they run over the border and call 911. yeah, but it's extraordinary, and I think I wanted to return to this idea of also how the rest of the world can join up in its signaling around these kinds of events, that it's like, you know, as you said, Lana, you know, the Brandenburg Gate can be lit up, the Jesus statue in Rio de Janeiro, the Empire State Building, bridges, all kinds of things are now converted into these colors, including the YouTube and the Google logos, and everyone can show each other how good and compassionate they are. Like that this was somehow a kind of a, even a necessary response? I mean, who, same thing with these politicians that come out and it's like, oh, I, you know, we feel for the families. And it's like, really? You know, what else are you going to say? This is just, it's a waste of space to just allow.
If they felt for the families, they would stop immigration full stop right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there are going to be more such families very soon. We all know this. If they really did feel for them, they'd do the necessary thing. They don't do the necessary thing. So either they don't feel for them at all or they're just totally cucked.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's almost like that they've taken this hit. It's, excuse the term, but they've taken a dildo really hard up their back end. And now they show to the rest of the world how we are not going to back down. We take it with pride. We're not going to let this divide us, right? Go ahead.
Well, Obama said the killing in France, he said, quote unquote, is an attack on all of humanity. It's like, no, it's an attack on white Europeans, on French people and white culture, Africa, Asia, the Middle East. They're not being flooded with all these hostile invaders who are killing them for their values. Only white countries. But of course, all the conservatives, you know, they chime in right away. And yes, it's an attack on the value of all races. And it's like, no, white people invented the idea of human rights, equality and fairness. So they're just not giving credit or sympathy where it's due here.
Well, you know what I think is interesting here? I want your comment on that too, Wills, but it's like, to a certain extent, this idea, I mean, we're talking about France here and the, even the tricolore, right? It stands, the blue is for liberty, the white is for equality, and the red is for fraternity or brotherhood, basically. This is the new religion that was initiated during the French Revolution. And this wouldn't be the case if it wasn't for this idea and belief in equality. That's really what this all this boils down to. And now we're seeing the full effect of this coming to fruition in the very country that were, you know, beheading people in in their own way to bring this about. So it's interesting, isn't it?
Well, I wonder how long it's going to be before something happens in Germany. Because, I mean, obviously that's where so many of these migrants are going to. It's interesting because I haven't heard anything about France with reference to the migrant crisis. It's all been Germany, Sweden, the Netherlands, Italy, Hungary, Turkey, obviously. But never France. And it's quite baffling. Well, and Austria as well, of course.
The one thing, too, I keep saying that we're being reminded of yes, this terrorism is bad, but let's not forget the Nazis are the worst, right?
Oh,
so
although
foreigners are in our countries and they're killing and raping us for being European, let's not forget about the Holocaust and the Nazis, okay?
Well, and also let's be very careful about how the nationalist parties in Europe might use this to their advantage, right? Because they did no such thing after Dylan Roof or after Anton Lundin in Sweden, you know? The opposite side didn't use that at all politically to gain advantage, right? So,
yeah. Well, I've got two things to say about that. First of all, the idea that this is happening and we've got nothing to, you know, we're just as guilty for various reasons. Well, that suggests that this is punishment of some kind.
Exactly.
So they're almost saying this is punishment. This is a bad thing. This mass immigration, and we deserve it. It's almost, I mean, it's implied in that statement. The second thing is about, you know, far-right nationalist parties using this. Well, you know, I think that's just ridiculous. It's like saying that when a fire happens, look at the fire service making capital out of that. You know, well, of course, that's what they're for.
Of course, exactly.
I mean, how do you expect nationalists to respond to this? They're not going to say, oh, yeah, great. Of course they're going to say, well, you know, if we'd gone by my policies, this would never have happened. Because it's true, and that means that we should go by these policies now. We should switch to those policies now, and here's the evidence. You know, to say that that's making political capital out of it is ludicrous. And, of course, liberals will not shy from using tragedies to make political capital out of it at all for their ends. You know, it's always us, right? This is the thing. It's we on the, let's just say, the nationalist side of things, because that can imply left or right. But it's always us who get accosted, accused, interrogated, made to defend our position, put into a position of weakness. Whereas, you know, the opposition, for doing exactly the same sorts of things, standing up for something, making political capital out of a tragedy, they do the same things and they never question themselves. They never question their own virtue. It's amazing to me that this is what I say time and again on my channel, that the lack of self-reflection on among liberals, among progressives, it's just incredible. They really are. They are totally convinced of their own virtue, their own incredible goodness.
Well, you're right. I mean, the politicians, those that have brought about this situation, they are really the ones that need to provide the answers here. They are the ones who should be pushed up against the wall, cornered, and demanded to answer what kind of societies that they have created. And as you say, somehow then it's those who are nationalistically inclined that has to like somehow feel guilt about how they potentially might want to look at, try to prevent these things from happening in the future. It's utterly senseless. And at the same time as this kind of stuff is occurring now in the West and in Europe, you have people like Peter Sutherland, for example, is out of Ireland, you know, the Goldman Sachs chairman, whatever the heck he is. And he's, you know, he did this lecture in Sweden not too long ago where he talks about how, you know, nationalism is like the greatest evil of our time, and it's like it doesn't work, and it's basically we had to eliminate nationalism by bringing in all these third world immigrants into Europe so that we wouldn't have these kinds of petty quarrels over small differences, right? So that we can prevent violence from happening.
So we can have terrorist attacks over major differences.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the only quote I knew from him was the one about the EU should be doing its best to undermine national homogeneity. And that was monstrous.
Yeah.
But then I found a video on YouTube by Gaelic neo-reactionary, and he's compiled all these clips of Peter Sutherland saying similar things. And it's just amazing how much evil there is in that man.
I agree.
I mean, I don't want to, I'm nervous about using dramatic language like that, but the man is totally twisted and psychopathic as far as I'm concerned.
I wonder if he's self-driven. Does he really believe this stuff, or is he just getting like paid off by Goldman Sachs to fulfill the agenda or something? I don't know.
Well, who knows?
Difficult to say.
He I don't know. He is Jewish.
Oh, really? Is he now?
Oh yeah, yeah. He is. He's not being paid by them. Well, maybe he is being paid by them, but he is one of them himself. Because I've forgotten how I found this out. It was something about, I think he was the chair of the Irish Jewish Museum. He's the chair in the board of directors or something like that.
Right.
So yeah, I think that pretty much means he's Jewish.
Well, there you go. Well, it if nothing else, if not on a genetic level, it's a level of allegiance, or we know where he that he hangs his hat on the menorah. Yeah. So yeah. Let's talk a bit about what is going to happen in the future with all of this, what this is developing into, and what you think Woz is going to come out of something like this. I mean, we can talk a little bit about the initial, early response to this, and where you see, you know, as all this is happening too, by the way, we can mention that Le Pen is undergoing her trial right now. She literally might be jailed for a few years for hate speech. Have you followed up? Do you know exactly what's going on with her case?
I didn't know that, no. I think I heard about it a year ago or something like that was going on.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Same with Geert Wilders, of course.
Right.
But I think did get away with it in the end. But anyway, I didn't know that. Yeah, this is new to me, actually.
Really? She's definitely arrested. Let's see if I can find anything on
I haven't heard anything new about that case either, but I would think after this event, she would be elected.
Well, she's going to gain ground on this, obviously.
She'll certainly gain from this. Yeah. She'll gain votes. But my friend reactionary expat, he believes that what's going to happen is, well, similar to what's happening in Sweden with the Sweden Democrats. All the other parties sort of just, what's the word? They combine, they gang up in order to keep the majority party out.
Mm, yeah.
Is it true? Am I right in thinking that the Sweden Democrats are the most popular party in Sweden now?
That's what it looks like. I mean, according to some of the latest polls, that's really where it's heading. So we'll see. As always, we see how true that is. We see. I mean, I'm wary of the accuracy of these voting of the votes now. Actually, if there was an election today, I would bet you that there would be people there who actively would do everything they could to try to undermine votes by making them disappear or unchecking them, or basically doing unscrupulous stuff to try to get them not coming to power. Because
isn't it incredible that this is what's happening in Sweden?
Yeah.
One of these uber northwestern European countries where everyone's honest and, you know, extreme moral integrity, or that's how it's reputed to be.
Yeah.
And now this kind of thing, this kind of disgusting gerrymandering, and ugh.
It's who cannot look at that country and see that it's been utterly destroyed on basically practically every level that we've had. You know, it was a role model country. It was homogenous largely. It was very peaceful, high trust, a great commons, a great system of government. I mean, you could have your, you know, complaints on it, and I do too. But nonetheless, I'd rather take the 1970s version of Sweden than the 2015 version of it any day.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that's what I always say nowadays, that whether you're a socialist, or whether you believe in a welfare state or not, you're a libertarian, it doesn't really matter. We can work these things out afterwards. The only thing that matters is securing a future for white people and securing a homeland, and everything else is really trivial.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care about...
Yeah, that's why we have to be more like the White Army. The White Army was a lot of different factions that got together to fight communism because they needed more strength, more numbers, and that's how we have to think, too.
Yeah, we can even take the name.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
You're right. What was I thinking about? It was something there falling off. Well, I guess I just wanted to comment on the fact...
Sweden is dreadful nowadays. You'd rather have the Sweden of the 70s.
Yeah, exactly. And anybody who objectively looks at what has happened to the country, my God, I mean, wake up, Christ's sake. You should see how this has changed the country and what has happened to it and what has happened to its people and the rigid... control of the dialogue and the way that it's not allowed to even discuss these kinds of issues. So I think it really is the canary in the multicultural coal mine, Sweden. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what develops there and what happens in the next few years as a kind of a response. Either it will fall and it will serve as an example to the rest of Europe, or it will be able to rise out of those ashes again and then be an inspiration to the rest of Europe of what might happen. So I think it's Sweden together with Germany is probably going to be the two countries where all of this transpires and spirals out of control at the earliest stage.
Yes. Well, it's a contest really, isn't it? Whether it's going to be Sweden, Germany, France, possibly the Netherlands or Britain. And I think it's either going to be Sweden or France.
France, it seems... Yeah, I mean, the riots in 2005 really started things up, and there's so many things that have happened. I remember seeing one of the videos of the migrant crisis that they didn't show you. And it's like some of these people are just like, they're not even housed and placed yet, and they're already like out on the streets rioting and throwing stones and fighting with each other. And it's just like, it's devastating.
I mean, yeah. Are people still flooding in right now? Did the EU just shut all borders after this event?
No.
Of course not, right?
France did, allegedly, right? Like, whoa, now you close the border.
Yeah, now you can do it. Really? Well, that should be obvious to people then, what they're doing, that they want people flooding in there. I mean, come on, we invented modern weaponry. If we wanted to protect these borders, it would be done.
Yeah,
of course. And that's something to bear in mind. We can always win. We just have to decide to.
But we don't know it's a fight yet. We're standing here with, you know, flowers and balloons welcoming these people, applauding them, you know, and say, come on.
Guys in pink shirts and earrings,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. What a bad day that was. You know, that sort of week when the whole thing started in, was it July or August?
Yeah, I think it was early August or something, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was early August. And they had these just ridiculous Germans being completely unrealistic and childlike about it, and it was quite galling. It was quite dispiriting because you think, you know, I mean, what happened to this proud people that they're now just cheering on their own destruction? And of course we know what happened, but it's just incredible to see it tangibly in front of you. This is a people cheering on their own dispossession.
Yeah, and I don't think ignorance is an excuse. They must know on some level of what this is going to lead to, right? I mean, this is what you said earlier. Was you talked about that the it's a kind of a sick, perverted pleasure almost they get out of seeing the destruction of their own country, I think.
Yeah, I mean, when a leftist hears about, let's say when a progressive hears about a town that's become majority Muslim, at some level, I think they do get a sort of thrill from that because they think, oh, that'll really annoy the right-wingers and the nationalists. But they also, I think there is this sense of sweet doom, destruction about it. It's very strange. It's a very self-destructive way of thinking, way of feeling. But I think it's there. And they're flirting. As I say, it's just a flirtation. It's a sort of intellectual curiosity almost. I'll get into this way of thinking just to see how it feels. It's really strange. It's the kind of thing that, you know, I went to art college, so I'm sort of used to this sort of thing, this weird, I'll be self-destructive and see how it feels. I've seen that kind of behavior. And I think that explains to some extent how leftists react to this. I mean, you know, as I say, when they see a town that's become majority Muslim, that should strike fear into their heart, but it should also disappoint them. It should sadden them to think of a part of their country that has now become the other. But instead, they respond to it with this perverse sort of masochistic thing. But as I say, it's just a flirtation. Ultimately, they don't want to be destroyed. And when it becomes much more real, when they realize, oh, hell, it's on my street now, and my daughter is being followed by, some group of Pakistanis, then it's real. And I think at that stage, you would have to be completely nuts to continue with this nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them, I don't think, will. I think there are a lot of people who are going to switch radically.
Right.
It just has to become real for them.
Yeah, then it's late. I mean, it's already late in the game, but it's like, really? Mm. You know, does it have to show up on your doorstep and knock on your door before you have the brains to put this together? I mean, if a 5-year-old can figure this out.
Yeah, a 5-year-old could, but that's the thing. A lot of it is that it's precisely because these people are intelligent that they are able to convince themselves of insane things.
That's true.
It takes an intelligent person to believe something that is obviously untrue.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that diversity will lead to harmony, that is obviously false. But yet, if you are if you're unintelligent, you have no choice but to accept the truth that statement is obviously stupid. If you're intelligent, you can say, okay, well, here's a way. I'll investigate this and find a way to convince myself of it. So it's interesting. It's intellectually interesting. It's a sort of challenge for a lot of leftists. And remember, a lot of it is just showing off to themselves. Oh, yeah, I'm quite clever. Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys think would have happened if someone did have a white guy, a French guy, had a gun in that theater and he actually used it and took out a couple of terrorists? What would have happened to that guy?
He'd be flogged. He'd be the terrorist now, right?
Apparently there was one blonde guy they were trying to focus in on. Is that even BS?
Was that even interesting? Because that was like one of the, like, they singled him out.
Yeah.
Like, as over-signaling to prove, see?
Yeah.
It was actually a Northern European in there as well. I don't know if that's been confirmed or not.
I haven't found anything else on it either.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything about that.
Well, that's why some Europeans should invest in 3D printers to actually print out weapons and guns, because all the foreigners coming in, they sure get these Western weapons, no problem. But what about our people?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm in Britain, so I can't possibly endorse that. But
people should get a hunting license. You know, that's nothing wrong with that. I mean, preparing and just being in a position where you, tactical and smart and figure it out that this is where it's going.
Safety, self defense, common bloody sense.
I was thinking too of what it is that drives this, and certainly the spirit of the West has been intentionally hollowed out, as one of the comments or the quotes went, of we're gonna make the West so corrupt that it stinks, or whatever it was, some Frankfurt School idiot. But nonetheless, within the environment that people grow up in today, they're devoid of any kind of sense of anything of the real, right? Where our experiences are the way we grew up is very, in most cases, not for all people. There are still hardships within Europe, and I'm trying to pretend that, but it's very secure in some cases. It's very safe, and it's very controlled and regulated, rigid. So I'm thinking if this death wish, if we can call it that, that many people feel, is kind of driven by the same desire that people engage in, like, extreme sports or something, like throwing yourself off a cliff, of getting like close to death, And that sensation in itself is like causing them to feel alive for the first time or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was getting at earlier. It's that thrill seeking. yeah, in a sense. It's all from a distance. It's all quite muted. But I think that does explain some of the motivation for this. I wanted to say earlier that at least one of the terrorists responsible for these attacks, at least one of them and possibly two, and maybe even more, we'll find out, did come in with the refugee crisis.
That's right. Yeah. Syria. Yeah.
That's right.
Only one of them was only 6 weeks ago. That's incredible.
Wow, 6 weeks. Well, I mean, this is not a secret. I mean, ISIS said this themselves. It was like 3, 4, 5 months ago or something. It was like, we're going to send in 200,000 people into Europe, and they're going to be ISIS friendly, and they're going to be there and waiting for our cue to strike, basically. And it's like, why is this a surprise? I mean, it's a this France, as I said earlier, was on a heightened state of alert. Even actually, some kids. See if I can find that quote again. Let me pull that up quickly.
Well, I saw just earlier in the day before it all started, I saw a headline that the French police are going to be authorized to use deadly force or something like that. So there was an escalation in their readiness. They were obviously expecting, they were either expecting something imminently or it was just a general change of policy. And then within hours, the terrorist attack happened.
Yeah, the chatter, as they call it, the intelligence services had allegedly noticed that something was like ramping up or whatever. And I also wonder, to a certain extent, if it's so much of this now that they basically can't deal with it. They don't have the resources or the funds to monitor all these people, you know?
Indeed, that's the thing. I wonder how much it costs to monitor one potential terrorist. It must be an absolute fortune.
France is so expensive.
Yeah.
Mm. And so if you've got thousands and thousands of them.
It's impossible. It's going to bankrupt us just to try to keep the peace.
More of these invaders coming in than guys on the police force.
Oh, right? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll get to that later in terms of what's going to happen future here if things escalate, military, what do they do, whatever. But let me just read this quote more regarding the chatter here. It's from thelocal.fr, the French version of The Local. And it says, Parisians warned about emergencies earlier on Friday. And here's the quotes from them. They say, there are ambulances passing all the time. Diha, who lives on Boulevard Saint-Germain, told The Local, adding that his son came home from school on Friday with a letter advising parents what to do in case of an emergency. It was completely out of the blue. I don't know if this was a coincidence or there were alerts before, but it doesn't feel like a coincidence, he said. It was advice for parents on what to do in an emergency, such as not calling or coming to the school, staying away from the area, and instead listening to updates from the radio stations. So it's like the kids were getting notes, basically, on like stuff is going to go down. But as we said before, I mean, they know this now. This is what they're expect. This is one of the beautiful side effects of vibrancy that is so such a necessity in the West, right? So they know this. So it's not a secret or anything like that. But it's basically, it's so out of their hands now that they're unable and incapable of dealing when these kinds of threat scenarios arise.
The way I see this, it's I came up with a rather clumsy metaphor for diversity, which is it's like having a transplant. Because you have to take anti-rejection drugs forever in order to prevent your body implementing the natural reaction, which is to reject the foreign tissue. And unfortunately, I mean, people are flexible and all that. It's not clear cut. But generally, the foreign element is going to be problematic. And there's going to be this constant war or nascent war going on between the native and the foreign. And so that's what we're seeing. And it gets very complicated and very, very expensive. And occasionally, sometimes it doesn't work and we get a terrorist attack. Or we get a long-running rape scandal. Or we get a school being taken over.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. It's all these natural effects, these inevitable effects of two things which are fundamentally incompatible trying to get along, or at least one of them trying to get along with the other.
Yeah, mixing water and oil just doesn't work. Lana, what do you think? I want to just ask you as well. What do you think about the future? How are things from your perspective as an American? You've been in Europe. We've been traveling around in Europe and all that stuff. But what do you think this is going to develop into?
oh, I think America is done as we know it. I think it's going to split off into different pieces. It's just going to spiral into, you know, just dumber and dumber people and more violence and more slums. In fact, I just found out that America is now paying $1.1 billion, and this is even after this event, to import in 100,000 so-called Syrian refugees into 180 American cities. And of course, I looked at the cities and there were like Portland, Oregon, and these very white places. So I think that this is just going to continue. The floodgates are just like, they're going to be pouring in even faster and harder now. There's going to be more violence. But I think that that's the best thing that could happen because it could wake our people up. Like, yeah. we were saying right now, it's just not bad enough for some Americans and some Europeans to see it. But once it comes to their doorstep, I think that they will be triggered in a different way.
Mm-hmm. And also the fact that you mentioned Portland, that's going to have a specific effect. If there was some kind of terrorist attack in Portland, that's going to be Swipple. It's going to be hipsters. Yeah. Hipsters, yeah. Liberals, foodies, whatever, these lefties, they're going to be, you know, if they got blown up, that's a slap in the face to everything that they have, that they pretend to believe in, mm-hmm. or that they sometimes do sincerely believe in. It's going to be a slap in the face to them. And they might well think, holy shit, I can be a really good progressive. I can be believe in social justice and equality, and my friends get blown up.
Yeah.
You know? But
yeah, that doesn't protect you from anything.
No, it doesn't.
And they doesn't. I think they think they do. There's like, well, I'm on your side here. I'm against you. I'm with you against Whitey here. You know, we're on the same team here. And it's like, nope, that doesn't matter.
Well, indeed, but that's the similar thing with the Black Lives Matter. I've got the impression that they're starting to tire of the white hangers-on, the lackeys who are there for the thrill of, you know, disobeying daddy, going against daddy. They're getting this thrill from tagging along with these black people and helping them in their cause, in their plight. And but the blacks, as they get more confident, they're starting to say, hey, we don't need these white people. They're not even here because they care about us, really. They're here just for a thrill. So it's a similar thing with progressives and, well, all multiculturalism. They're eventually, these groups do get so confident that they don't need you anymore. It's like with Muslims in Britain. The Labour Party has been their best friend for, a long time, decades, at least 40, 50 years. And, sooner or later, there's just going to be an Islamic party.
And oh, then for sure.
You won't need the Labour Party anymore. Well,
they'll use the Western democratic system, which they hate so much, to get themselves in power.
And just like they use the Western smartphones to detonate a bomb.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yep. And then they'll vote us out of any position of influence, basically, when they have the majority, and say, well, you know, it's democracy. We voted to remove democracy. And we want to have a Sharia courts. We want to have a system of that. And you have to start paying, I forget what the term is, but there's some tax they put on you. Yeah, exactly.
There was a hate preacher in Britain called Anjem Chowdhury. And here the dole, the welfare, the standard welfare is called the Job Seekers Allowance. And he referred to it as Jizya Seekers Allowance.
Wow. That's telling, isn't it? Whew. And they also seem to think that just...
They don't make it easy to like them, to be honest.
No, well, of course not, exactly. And this is the thing, is like, we're trying so hard to be inclusive. And I mean, this is one of the comments I saw from people on the street in France. They were pretty much blaming themselves, right? It's this woman said, it's us French people who don't, we haven't let these people in, you know, they don't get to be part of our society. And that's why this happens.
Well, to some extent, that rationale makes a kind of sense, because the French, they're renowned for ghettoizing their Muslim immigrants. And so, you know, the banlieues. And so I knew that this was going to be said. Some leftists would say, well, if only we integrated them more. Here's the thing, though. First of all, it does not benefit us to integrate them more. I mean, we might avoid the terrorist attack, but it still doesn't benefit our society. It doesn't benefit us to integrate Muslims. Second, the Muslims don't want to be integrated.
Exactly.
You know, everyone wants to be around people who are similar to them. And why would you not want to live in an Islamic ghetto if you were a Muslim?
That's what all these asylum seekers, when they sent further up north in Finland and Sweden, they're like, it's boring here. There's no clubs or like bars or anything. We want to go back to Malmö, you know, where all the Muslims are.
No stonings.
Some of those guys didn't have a pot to piss in, and then they go, you know, into Europe and complain about the housing.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
come on.
The cheek of those people is really beyond belief.
No service. Remember the clip?
Yeah. No, some guy complaining about his balls hurting, and doctors say I need someone to make sex with.
Make sex with anything. Bigs are very ball. Balls very, very big. Understand?
God. Yeah. Disgusting.
Yeah.
Bad internet connections. You know, kind of slow internet. You know.
And they only had one TV.
Oh my God.
This is amazing. Yeah, but this is the funny thing, though. Well, it's funny. That apparently Sweden is now running out of places to put them. So
a long time ago, yeah.
They're going to be in tents over the winter.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, they're not going to be complaining about a slow internet connection then.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, it is amazing. I mean, the migrant crisis has really revealed the extent, the sheer incredible extent of white altruism and kindness. And but it's to such an extent that it's self-destructive and, you know, insane. But, it, you know, it does make you think, my God, you know, if these were white people that we were helping, or even East Asians, I would think this is incredible. This is amazing what we're doing here. And the sheer efficiency, the intelligence, the German organization, I would really get a thrill from it. And maybe at some level, liberals get a thrill from seeing what we're doing, that we can handle this kind of a crisis like this, and to some extent we can handle it, but we're not helping East Asians, and we're certainly not helping fellow whites. We're helping people who are, I think, bound eventually to destroy our societies and destroy us.
Well, and this should be a temporary thing. They need to go home after everything is done. They should not be here permanently. I mean, what is that?
Yeah, there's no question of them going. They're not going to go home. If you were a Syrian, would you go back to Syria? I mean, or Africa? I wouldn't. I'd want to stay where the, you know, we can get government, white government cheese. And they're never going to go back, not willingly. And I think everyone knows this. And everyone also knows that they're not going to contribute to the economy. That's another ridiculous lie that we're supposed to
They keep repeating
peddle.
That all the time. Yep. Yeah. It's a boon.
It's one of those things we're supposed to repeat to each other, like Pavlov's dogs, you know. it's going to be great for the economy. Everyone knows that it's going to be dreadful. Absolutely dreadful for the economy, because these people are not qualified. A lot of them have apparently the average IQ in Syria is 85.
Oh boy!
Really?
I was told that actually by that anarchist yesterday. I didn't know that. In fact, I'm going to verify it just now, just in case I don't want to spread a lie.
Still 20 points higher than Somalis.
Oh my God! It's 83.
Oh yeah. Oh boy. Well, but those are biased Western tests, so don't worry.
Oh, of course.
Oh, my God. And so despite all this, right, despite this just monumental, just like reassessment of our entire culture, something that hasn't happened in probably ever. I mean, this has never happened in history before, as far as we know. This is bigger than the migration age in the 500s and the 600s, which completely overturned, well, really, at that stage, world history, due to the movement of many of these people. And despite those things, we are the problem, and we are not doing enough.
We are always the problem. Whites are always the ones who are probably responsible for some problem or some bad thing that's happened. It's always us. It's amazing how you see that happening. You see that playing out time and again.
Yeah, it's interesting how people, they're excusing, you know, the mass killing and the behavior of these invaders because of what America is doing in the Middle East. Okay, so what a few political elites in APAC do, all of Europe, even these innocent, neutral countries, they, you know, they're innocent people deserve to get killed. It's their fault. So we're told to not classify all Muslims as extremists, and yet they turn around and classify all white people as evil and guilty, right?
Yeah, there's another, and yeah, and there's another contradiction there within leftist thinking, because they're saying, on the one hand, that we shouldn't judge Muslims as a group and so on, but now they're saying, in that context, they're saying that Muslims are a group and that they're coming here because we have ruined their countries. Right, so it is two separate groups then, when it suits the leftist. And then at other times, oh, everyone's an individual. Everyone, we're all wonderfully unique.
Yeah.
Yeah, was it
so tedious.
Terrorism has no religion. hashtag wars. And this is what it kind of boils down to, though. It boils down to these kind of petty slogans while our entire culture is being actively undermined and destroyed under us. And I just, what's your take, Woz? I mean, do you think that out of this, there's going to be a positive upswing, that you're going to see a reignited confidence in Western man due to this eventually, that out of the ashes of this fire that now is raging, something is going to happen? What do you think?
Yeah, the short answer is yes. I mean, and the long answer would be it's going to take time and there are going to be more terrorist attacks. They're going to have to happen. But I think even with this one and with Hebdo, but more so with this one, I think you can sense a change in mood. Like on Facebook, I'm a member of certain apolitical groups, and they're just, you know, current affairs sorts of groups. And even there, you can sense this, that the anti-Muslim thing, that sentiment is almost as prevalent as the pro-Muslim sentiment, pro-immigration. So I think change has taken place. And, you know, just, I mean, you know, France has had two major terrorist attacks, and it's had other ones within this year. And it's had other minor ones as well, like the guy in the train with the, you know, the four American soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
I think one of those soldiers was British actually. But anyway, whatever. Or you've had the one where the guy was beheaded and his head was put in a spike at his workplace. Do you remember that?
God, I don't. It's amazing that completely missed the radar, my radar.
Some bizarre incident earlier in the year. I think it was around April, but I don't want to get too much into it. But I think it was a guy's boss, and he man decapitated a severed head. It's just amazing. And that was June.
Oh my God.
That was June at ATC Colicom in Chasseau. So the point is, two major terror attacks in one year, plus these minor ones, plus the ongoing resentment, low level, everyday resentment and suspicion, mistrust. Things are changing as a result of this. And, you know, there will be another one. There probably will be another terror attack in France next year. And maybe even two.
Maybe even sooner.
Indeed, it could be with, you know, yeah, for Christmas. We don't know.
Well, I expect it to be perpetual eventually. It's like that movie Brazil with, that's a good name for it too, but
I haven't seen Brazil.
Turn into Terry Gilliams. Yeah, definitely take a look at that. It's kind of like these people who are like, you know, they're pretending like the explosions aren't really, you know, going off. They're just like, they're trying to sit in a restaurant and dine, and they just put up these like screen doors after a bomb has gone off. And it's like, this is what it's turning into, this amazing self-delusion of disconnection from reality, that you just avoid, compartmentalize certain aspects out that you've been told not to bring any attention to, and just go about your merry way and pretend like it's raining. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. But as I say, I think that every time something like this happens, it wakes some people up. And I think this one has woken up a lot of people. And I think the next one will do the same. And eventually, I mean, this gets us back to the political situation with Marine Le Pen. Let's assume that there is one more terror attack in France next year. Then the elections, the presidential elections in 2017. Let's assume that she is not in prison, or whatever, she's free, she might well win that election.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I mean, yeah. It would, if the other parties, the other candidates, you know, somehow if they ganged up to lock her out, then the French people are going to know. They're going to see that.
Well, that's just it. No matter what they do, no matter what move they make here, is going to make them look like fools and morons for trying to prevent the democratic process that they've been pushing for all this time. Yeah.
Yeah. Their tactics are going to have to get ever more crass and obvious. I mean, one thing is, if she does win, then the EU is finished, because she'll take France out of the EU. And I don't think that the EU can survive with just Germany at the helm, because it's essentially going to be a sort of German, a bureaucratic German empire then.
Right.
And that's not sustainable. So the EU would be over. And that's why I think, and the EU bosses will know this. They'll know this now. So they must be very scared about the possibility of Marine Le Pen taking control of France. So I think there will be a lot of skullduggery and nasty tactics to keep her out. But again, those when that is done, when these politicians voice those sorts of sentiments, they are going to look increasingly ridiculous to the public. I think it's becoming that way already with Obama saying that this was an attack on everyone. People don't, yeah, some people will still buy that. But I think everyone knows deep down this is an attack on whites and on European man and his civilization. And it will never stop. It's just like the Yale and Missouri things this last week. These things are inevitable and they will never stop. They will always get more and more frequent until the white man has been vanquished and his society destroyed. People are starting to be aware of that, I think. They you know, we still hear the parroted slogans, oh, it's because of what we did here or there, or what we did 100 years ago, or it's because of the Crusades 1,000 years ago. But everyone, I think, is starting to come around to the idea that it really doesn't matter what we've done, it really doesn't matter what our policies are. The hatred is for us. It's for us as a race. Yeah. Because, well, that's just where everything is aimed.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I think people cannot help but react to that in the natural way, which is, oh, holy shit, you know, I actually quite like being white. And I actually quite like the white race. And I actually quite like European civilization. So maybe I should just wake up. And they should. The sooner the better.
Exactly. Well, I hope that many of the kids that grow up in this too have an appreciation and understand what it is. I fear that the history that they get taught these days is so skewed, and even like,
oh yeah,
you know, even when you watch a TV show these days or a movie or anything that goes back retroactively into history, they are rewriting it every time. They're revisionists. They are the revisionists. They're trying to impose certain things historically, which wasn't the case, such as, you know, multiculturalism or whatever, in like a clearly like a European story, you know.
That makes me so angry.
Yeah,
like when I see something set in 12th century England and there's a black guy there or a Pakistani, and you know, someone said to me, I've had two insane reactions to that when I've objected to it. One liberal said to me, well, there were some black people in Britain in the 12th century, and what they're talking about is like one in a million.
Yeah.
Moorish merchants, you know, nothing. No. The idea that that would be an everyday sight is insane. Most people would live their entire lives without ever seeing someone who was of another race. So it's not an everyday thing. The other thing they've said is, well, would you object if they had the wrong eye color?
You know, boo-hoo. God,
yeah, you know, stupid. I mean, that's just so fatuous, it doesn't even deserve a response.
Yeah, it's remarkable, you know, but this, so back to the kids there again, that I hope that they have an appreciation for how things really were initially, and how things, what kind of societies they were. So they're not just kind of induced into this, indoctrinated into the system of doing things that they don't understand that. Or in other words, this is something that would make them go in line with the plans of the founder of the pan-European movement back in the early 1900s, Kudenhof Kalergi, who talked about this, the need for the European to breathe themselves out, basically, and mix out. But as long as this separateness that exists there now is very tangible, meaning, you know, them versus us, they don't want to integrate, they don't want to become part of our society, then that plan is not going to work for them, I think.
Exactly. I mean, I worry about this, but what must it be like for a child today to be growing up in a multicultural city where they see on TV, they see that Britain or Sweden always had black people, always had Pakistanis and so on. They must have a very strange sense of what it is to be a Swede or a Briton. Because, you know, when I was a child, everyone on TV was white, especially if it was a historical thing. There was no question of someone being played by a black actor. That would have been absolutely unthinkable.
Yeah.
Mm. Whereas now the child of today sees an image of Britain and England, oldie, worldie, medieval England, and they think it was multiracial. So that is clearly insane. And it's obviously it's untrue, but it more importantly, it will lead to this sense of well, who am I? But the thing is, at the same time as that is going on, they are being demonized for being white. So they know they know that there is something about that whites exist as a group, because otherwise you can't attack them as a group.
Right.
So the kid today knows that whites exist, that whites are a group, and there is something historical about them which causes this hatred of them. And at first they'll think, oh, it must be that we're bad. But then eventually even that isn't enough, because they'll start to think, well, I'm not bad. And I don't know bad white people. So, you know, we're all okay. So why is there so much hatred? And some of them will look into history and they'll see, oh, well, the reason that we're so hated is that we're so incredibly creative and talented and intelligent and reasonable. And that's why we're hated. It's not because we're bad, it's because we're good.
Well, this is when parenting is very important. Parents can't be lazy and lax right now. They need to be really involved in their children's education and actually pull them out of school, teach them the true history. It's important now or never, because then they will just breathe themselves out, because what's it mean to be white anyway? They don't even think about that, you know?
Mm. Oh, yeah. That's even people of my age group, like mid-30s, they're thinking like that. I mean, there's this dreadful, ugly nihilism about my age group. Sort of tail end of Gen X, the start of the millennials.
Yeah, same era.
And
we're the
it's
same.
Grotesque. Yeah, yeah, it's really ugly to listen to them. Like, well, why would I care? What does it matter? What difference does it make?
Because you see, this is the thing, and I can really speak to this because I remember how it was growing up in Sweden around, you know, that period when there was nothing there. There was just like an intense nihilism that was just about, you know, the more depressed you were, the cooler you kind of were or something. I don't know.
Grunge.
Right. Yeah. And it's just some kind of, emo nihilism mixed with some kind of self-destructive attitudes. And it's like no appreciation for history, no appreciation for culture or art or war history or anything like that. It's just like we're completely isolated from it. And it took me more than 20 years just to like get out of that and revisit and self-teach myself again.
I bet even today you still have the occasional twang. I do. I mean, I still think, oh, is that right? Is that nasty? Am I being horrible here?
Right. Yeah.
It's still there. It's
I'm getting better
difficult.
At it, but
you get much better at it. You harden up and you learn to just know. You learn to just think. It's fine. I've got to believe in the race.
Yeah, it's like here we are, you know, discussing these things. If we even morally just can think something, why there are kids now growing up in the Middle East, in some cases not only watching but also even performing beheadings. The attitudes here are just they're light years apart, and the way that we have grown up in the West is in such a weakened position that I'm afraid for that. Are people going to be able to handle these things if and when this really kicks into high gear? You know,
well, yeah, I think they will. There is going to be a lot of trauma, but there are always hard men. There are always tough men. There are always military men. There are always the local tough guy. And I think it will also just be a fight for survival. I mean, every man is going to be called upon here. You know, I mean, whether you're arty like me, or whether you're a bodybuilder, or you're a businessman, whatever, we're all going to have to man up.
Every man has
There's
a
no
break,
choice.
Every man has a breaking point before they just snap and that thing takes over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we just have to harness that as well. See, this is the other thing that you can have plenty of people who feel isolated individually. They might wake up to it, kind of like the guy in Sweden, Anton Lundin. And I think I don't understand his motivations, and I'm not trying to, you know, justify it or anything like that. I'm just trying to observe what might have happened in him and his mentality. And it's like, I think that he went through something and just came to that breaking point immediately. And so instead of becoming a constructive force, you know, working in the right direction for something, he became a temporary destructive force, and his measure is really not going to help anything, I think, in the larger picture.
No.
Maybe it will, depending on how you see, you know, strategies and tactics back and forth and that kind of tension that arises from this. But nonetheless, the bottom line is it doesn't really help. So it's important that these people know that they're not alone in this. They need to know that there are more people there, and you know, all this kind of stuff. That they need
a brotherhood for some guidance.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that's something that I've been trying to emphasize on my channel, that you're not alone, and we are here. It's okay, and you shouldn't do crazy things, because, as you say, I don't think it helps anyone, and it just slows down the cause.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have to start it, right? It's going to be started by them.
Well, it already has. This is the thing. I mean, you said Germany, what is going to come down and happen in Germany is like women are being raped. People are being pushed out of their homes. There's violence on the street. These kids are getting picked up. I've seen some horrendous videos where these German kids are basically, they're not fighting back. They're unable to. There's this one foreigner guy, kid, I think he's even smaller than him, just running after him, punching him in the face, kicking him, and he's lying down, he's sitting on him, punching him in his face, and all he's doing is just crying, and he doesn't know what to do. He can't fight back.
Because there are several of them and only one of him.
Right.
You know, that's a horrible situation that no one, it makes you crumble, because it's so terrifying. It's so intimidating. I'll tell you what really got me was about 6 months ago, this video, there was a short video on, I think it was on Live Leak, and it showed a bunch of Africans. I don't think they were Muslim. Just a bunch of black guys in France. I think it was in Paris, and they were teasing this white blonde French woman, you know, young pretty French girl, and one of them punched her in the face.
Yep, I've seen it.
Just made me so angry. I thought, you vermin.
Yeah.
You know, you scum. Yep. Why on earth are you in this country, this civilization? I know that they're not all like that. I mean, just for the sake of balance, let's just say that. I know that they're not all like that. But we should not be tolerating anything like this.
Well, it's not a secret.
There's always this danger.
It's not a secret that this is what happens in multicultural societies. The studies have been done on this. It's done. We know that trust goes down, crime goes up, people engage in tension on racial and ethnic basis. I mean, Frank Salter has proved this. He's referenced the studies and all that, and we can continue to try to deny it, of course. But it's almost like we're back at that thing you mentioned before. It's like, just because we need fucking kebabs, you know, in Germany, all of this is like somehow it's worth it. You know, I mean, these kids or they need some Moroccan food in Paris, you know, it's like, then it's all worth it. This is the price you just have to pay. Some white girls getting raped and beaten up, you know, by people who shouldn't be in the country. It's fine. It's fine.
But it's all a question of distance. For now, the liberal can just kid himself. But as this stuff becomes more prevalent and he actually knows someone, some girl who got raped, I'm sorry to say that, because it's terrible. It's absolutely horrendous. But it is going to happen. And as it does happen, the liberal will find increasingly few possibilities for self-delusion. He's going to have to face up to it.
Yeah. And they will I mean, I want them to be not only held accountable, these politicians, but they should know what they have done. They should, you know, they need to understand how this has destroyed, utterly destroyed people's lives. And potentially, I mean, I think we're going to come out of this at the end, but we're talking about the active destruction of the attempt at destroying an entire civilization that has given the entire world more than any other civilization.
Well, indeed, you can look at it very simply like this. Which race has done more for all the other races than the white race? I mean, you couldn't say that the Chinese have helped the world in the way that the whites have.
No, no.
Or the sub-Saharan Africans or Arabs. No one. I mean, it's Europeans. We are, we have done the most for everyone else, and yet we are the ones who are constantly told that we're evil.
Yeah.
Again, that that contradiction is going to become ever more glaring. Obviously, it already is glaring. Ultimately, I think we are going to win this, because we have the ability, the technology, the creativity, the problem-solving abilities. And we just have to decide to win, and then we'll win. We will.
I think on the good side, too, I know you talk about birth rates a lot. There's a lot of lefties and feminists that are not having children. And I think that this is actually a good thing that they end their line and not spread the disease to their offspring. Whereas people like us are talking about having many children, you know?
Yeah.
I hear
yeah.
a lot of people on our side, they're like, I want 5+ kids. So that's a hopeful thing as well, because then it'll be people like us that our kids go into the future and have a different mindset.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Again, the number of people I know who are just, they're just weak, R-type nihilists. And they just, I mean, they're in their mid-30s, they're still going to parties and clubbing and getting drunk, taking drugs, having promiscuous sex. And I just think, you know, the gene pool is going to be better off without you. So it's just as well exactly. you're not having kids.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the truth. Well, I mean, it's not, we don't even have to make moral value judgments on top of that. It's that's just the end result of nature right there, you know?
Well, it's biology. Yeah. Biology, it's just going to happen that these people who are inefficient and destructive and self-destructive and don't really offer anything to society, it's quite right that they die out. I'm not saying that they should be genocided. I don't think they should. I'm saying that there's no need for them to be genocided because mm-hmm. they're going to disqualify themselves from the gene pool by so diligently using contraception and so on. So, you know, good.
And then I think it seems like on one hand, we're obviously heading towards low birth rates in the West. I do think it's about quality and not quantity, though, because I've heard many of these Islamic preachers and people on television shows in Turkey talking about how, you know, they're going to win by the womb, basically, of just like, you know, plopping them out. And this is going to be the conquest. But it's like, if that is the mentality, and even if we look at the projections of Africa, I think we're just going to be up to about 4 billion people by the end of the century. I know it's tricky with projections and stuff like that, but, you know, just doing the math that is as it exists right now, there's going to be a population collapse at some point if this continues. And I think in that regard, well, maybe then whites would be better off because it would be a smaller, but hopefully more, kind of cohesive group at that point, which is going to be hopefully able to deal with that, you know?
Yeah, and K-type as well. It's going to be people who are responsible, who think ahead, who are, they have resilience, they have persistence, and
And if there's less whites doling out the foreign aid, you know, we give billions in foreign aid to all these third world countries and then also welfare, then their population won't explode. They won't be able to sustain it because that's one of the reasons why they had a lot of kids in Africa, because a lot of them would die, starvation, disease, you know. And so we've actually been preventing that, you know, healing them of some of those things. I know people say, oh, you're down there vaccinating and testing and killing. No, look at the numbers. Their population has exploded mm-hmm. because
that's
of our intervention.
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
And then you'd think that that in itself would be enough to absolve us of any supposed guilt, you know. But still, even with that evidence, we're still apparently evil. We've still got it in for the black man. I mean, it's just insane.
It's not because we're not giving them everything, right? Or we're not we need to be working for them. It's like they want us around so that we can kind of tug and pull in their direction, but they don't want to. Preferably, I don't want to see you. So can you kind of just move to the side a bit there? You know? It's like, I don't want to see you, but I want to know you're there working for me. Okay.
Well, that's, there are several groups who speak of white people in that way. And one of them is Muslims. You know, I've seen quotes from them saying, yeah, the white man is the infidel is there to work for us. So that's why they have no, some of them at least, have no guilt about taking the job seeker's allowance, jizya. They just see it as jizya.
Well, that's Allah's will, right? The money made its way to you in some way. And it's nothing about it's a matter of like, we working for a few hundred years to be able to get to a society and civilization which is even able and capable to have a system like that. Nothing to do with that. This has been granted to me by Allah, you know, and that's what's important.
You can see how Islam is such a destructive, socially and societally destructive force, because these, like that very attitude there is going to ensure that the society crumbles. and ends up as a desert hellhole. Because no one's going to do anything. No one's going to do anything to better the place. In the meantime, we'll just exploit these people that we've conquered, drain them of their resources, make it very difficult for them to reproduce. Eventually, they'll die out, and then we'll have killed the goose that lays the golden egg, and then our society will be a complete dump.
Haven't thought it through, have they?
No. And then you think, well, so there's so-called Islamic golden age 1,000 years ago. Is this how it happened?
Right.
I think it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, as we know, they're very tribal. They don't have that concept of commons. It's much more very, very close-knit, tight communities. And there is apparently a lot of inbreeding, too, according to a Danish study that was released a few years ago, which creates low IQ and a number of health problems, unfortunately. But I wonder the initial effect of some of these, of this kind of mentality when they increase in numbers within our countries. I'm thinking about, let's say a small town somewhere in Sweden, maybe somewhat further up north, they're used to getting regular deliveries, let's say, to the grocery store. When certain zones and areas here are going to begin to be taken over, and when you can't even maybe get transportation of goods up to some of these areas again, there might literally be like the Somali pirates, right? They're heists against truck traffic, for example, or something. And this could go in any direction here, where we might not be able to get food into some of our grocery stores anymore, for example.
Yeah, I was having this conversation a month or two ago with someone. I was saying, like, if a major English city went Islamic, or a major area, then, well, how could you get a train through that area? Because they would just plant IEDs on the train line. So that ruins the transportation then, or on the motorway. It doesn't matter anywhere. Mm. They could ruin our infrastructure. They could retard our, the threads that keep society going. And so you'd end up with lots of disparate places that had to somehow eke out a survival on their own. And that's not how the West, that's not how we've lived for a very, very long time.
No. No.
And it wouldn't be pretty, I love Amazon deliveries as much as anyone else does.
It's true. And I fear a little bit that we might, that's why, when we talk about this, it's not for the sake of being alarmist. It's for the sake of being in mode of preparation and basically just ready that civilization as we know it is a very fine-tuned thing that is very delicate, and it hasn't worked in many areas of the world for various reasons and whatnot. And it's, I think it's constantly more or less hanging by a very thin thread. And right now we're in a position where we count on the fact that we can go to the grocery store and get our supplies there. If you have 3-4 days of that being shut down, there'll be chaos, on the streets really quick if that's the case. And I'm not saying that that's the way it's going to go or that's the way it's going to happen, but it's never a bad idea to be prepared and able to think ahead about these things and know that, if you have a week or 2 weeks of supplies, that's not going to be a negative thing for anybody to have that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're just not used to that. And, some people will say that, well, this is why civilization is bad. I think I wouldn't. I think that's not true. I think that's too simplistic. Civilization has this unfortunate side effect of making people complacent and too comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we all, ultimately we are going to, we are bound to rebuild it, because nobody wants to live, like our ancestors lived 1,000 years ago. No one wants that anymore, and we're not going to put up with it. Even if it would be good for us, we're not going to do it. I know that's kind of irresponsible, because you think, well, you should return to this earthy lifestyle and truth. Yeah, we should. But hopefully we'll find a way to combine that with modernity and the convenience of Amazon and so on. I hope we do.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I think it's good to be in tune with those other elements, so we know that we don't rely on a machine, obviously, all the time and all that stuff. But yeah, I agree with you. Let me ask you this. So where do you think the military is going to be in all of this?
Oh.
When this escalates, we can even talk about the police or whatever, but at some point it feels like initially they'll turn on their own people at first, initially, if things start to escalate or heat up. What do you think?
I agree. I think at first they'll turn on their own people, because that will be what the command tells them to do, what the government tells them to do. And then eventually that will just implode. That will fail, because the police are ultimately white people. Most of them are still white, and same with the army. And the army especially both organizations have an inherently right-wing conservative ethos, a psychology. These are organizations that are trying, that their purpose is to maintain. It's not to improve necessarily. Like the policeman, he thinks about catching the criminal and preventing the next criminal. He doesn't think about multiculturalism or right. rainbows and lollipops. He's very locked in the here and now, which is good. That's what we need him to be. And so I think these organizations are, to cut a long story short, they are innately conservative. There are politically correct forces trying to interfere with that, and to some extent they're having some success. But ultimately, these organizations are right-wing. So I think they will revert to type in the event of, a crisis, and do their damn jobs, which is to look after their own people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as I say, most of the police are white, most of the army are white, and they're just going to start to think, right, I can do what the government's telling me to do, but I don't like the government, I've never trusted them anyway, and what they're telling me to do is to fight against my own people. No thanks. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And that will happen. I'm sure that will happen. Eventually, we'll get an initial phase of insanity from the government issuing ridiculous, diktats. And then, I don't know how long that will last. It's impossible to predict, but it won't last very long. The army is going to be on our side. The police are going to be on our side. And I say that with some trepidation, because I wouldn't be surprised if my channel gets shut down in the near future or I get arrested. I try to stay on the right side of the law, but I'm aware that
they're tightening the noose around that too, by the way. Obviously hate speech and what that entails, and I know Theresa May is like a freaking maniac over there in the UK about these things, so
they're quite unpredictable. And the law itself is unpredictable, and I think they want it that way. They want people to be err on the side of caution and just not say anything. I don't know, but I think the police know what's what. And I think the army know what's what, and I think ultimately they'll be on our side.
It's true. They are more inclined to the right, generally. And I've heard of, I've connected with a few police here who have reached out, and they tell me that there's other cops that are awake and are aware and see what is going on. So there's a whole brotherhood there of cops and people in the military that we don't know about. And I think that they are having these conversations and entertaining a lot of these scenarios in their head too. I am more concerned about America though, because the military is definitely, with affirmative action, it's more non-white soldiers. So I feel like a lot of those would just turn on us in a heartbeat, and murder.
Yeah. Well, see, that's just it. The cops in Sweden now, they're in a position where they have to face some of the brunt end of this, basically, of getting stoned in some areas where they go through. They take different routes, they're avoiding certain areas, they're out there on the streets, there have to be additional cars just patrolling the first car that's there for the actual incident or whatever. So they're seeing what the result of this is. So I can't imagine that they are positive in any regard to any of this. But the issue is what you just touched upon, is that they're seeking to diversify both police and military, and that has to be that's why most of this have to be in a position where it transpires before there has been a replacement of the managerial class within European countries, because that's a real possibility that they're seeking to replace us, and they're doing it a few people at a time. So
that's
what I'm
right.
saying is, if this goes on 3-4 years. If this goes on like, let's say 20, 30 more years, then it might not be a majority European, population within the European armies anymore. We just don't know.
And it's like in America, a lot of the government jobs, it's non-whites getting those jobs. So they're not going to be so forgiving and kind to you.
Right.
What an absolute joke that is, that America, it is a white creation. And it's just so disgusting to think of it being taken over by Hispanics and blacks, and them now being in charge of it.
It's happening, you know, it's changed, you know, growing up in America. It's drastically changed. People are rude. It used to be such a friendly place, and people were polite, and the service was good. All of that is going out the window now. It's drastically changing. It's not the same country that I grew up in. It's unfortunate. And then this new breed of liberal kid that's growing up is very, like, arrogant and cocky and condescending. seriously, mm-hmm. they're just not nice people.
Yeah. Yeah, we were in D.C., obviously, and it felt like a European city because there were so many burqas and hijabs everywhere. It was like, I felt like, oh, I'm in Europe again. Great.
That's right. We were a minority sightseeing in the nation's capital.
Yep.
I mean, that was alarming to me.
Mm.
Yep. I saw like three blondes, and it was a sea of black hair all around me looking at these buildings. And I'm thinking, these people don't appreciate what our race has done and what our race has built. So part of me was thinking, if they're like, I wonder when one of our people are going to be in that big White House.
Well, this is just it. Yeah, well, this is what Obama is talking about when he's saying, we need to, what is it? I'm paraphrasing, but he's saying something like, we need to update basically we need to have the constitution and the tenets of American virtues to become alive and interpret them in such a way so that they mean, they hold true to what we feel today, right? Our values today. What that means is that basically the statue of Lincoln up there in the Lincoln Memorial, that's going to be ripped down at some stage here because it's like, that's an evil white, you know, oppressive man up there on the pillars. And that's just not how we feel anymore as Americans, right? So it'll be torn down.
You know, an interesting point there. For now, Lincoln is a sort of hero. Exactly,
he is for now.
But eventually, once that's no longer needed, once it's no longer useful, then the liberals are going to start saying, but you know, he wanted to deport all the Africans.
That's right. He had slaves.
Then he'll be a devil. And that'll be one more white person, one more white figurehead dismantled.
Well,
what's
so funny too is people think that in America, if whites were just out of the picture, it'll be just utopia. There's so many different groups in this country jockeying for power and political power and wanting to be the top dog. Mexicans aren't hanging out with the Arabs and hanging out with the blacks, and it's very segregated even amongst the non-whites. So these liberals are just fooling themselves thinking it's going to be some utopia among them.
I just wish we could segregate and say to them, okay, you have this state and all the Arabs are there, all the blacks are there, all the Hispanics are there, and you liberals can join as well. You know, put together four or five contiguous states and give them that area. Just let them go, let them have it, and we'll see how long they last. Because by God, it wouldn't be long.
No. No, exactly. They cooperate now to get the whites out of the picture, but after that, it's a free-for-all, you know, mayhem.
Oh, yeah, without us, without the whites in charge, it would be chaos.
Yep.
These different groups are not going to be nice to each other. They're not going to be reasonable. They're going to wipe each other out.
And, that's right, yeah.
The idea that they can blame it on whites now, without whites, things would be so much better. That's just total self-delusion on their part. And it gets tedious, to be honest. To witness that sort of self-aggrandizement, that self-delusion. It's just, you know, I'm at the stage. I'm sick of it. I'm just sick of the listening to this stuff and humouring them. Nowadays, I just say to them, look, if you don't like it in white countries, just go. Leave.
Yeah, get out of there. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Go to Africa. Yeah. Why are you here? Yeah. Why are you here? If you don't like it, just piss off.
It's like, why is it always that the person who wants to, like, tear everything down has to, like, his will or her will is, like, recognized? It's like the ones that wants to change the entire structure of it, instead of them then having to go to, let's say, already a multicultural society like Brazil or Argentina or something, you know, I don't know. But it's like their will has to be pushed through that, to we have to change thousands of years of civilization and a way that a people have lived, and it's not until that's done that I'll feel pleased about myself and feel like I've done something.
Yeah, and the reason is that they know that their people had no part in that progress, that they had no part in that. It's entirely a white achievement, more or less. You know, it's entirely a white achievement. And therefore, there is always going to be resentment, no matter how good an achievement it was, no matter how admirable. It would always annoy them and dig away at them. So what do you expect? This is the transplant thing. It's two foreign things that really are just constantly, every day, rejecting each other in a thousand little ways. And it's inevitable. not because of any local disagreements, but just because they are fundamentally different things.
And what's so wrong with separating? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with having separate homelands? What are these people so afraid of, to be separated?
If white people are so awful to live with, if we're oppressing you all the time, just why do you want to live with us? Piss off.
Of course. Well, I mean, again, they're working to gain rights or whatever they do for their people, right? To be recognized, to be, you know, we want to have our people on the TV. We want to be represented in the political system. We want to have our people at CEOs of the companies. We want to be in place. We want to run things, basically, right? So it's like, well, you already have that. You came from a country that where you have these things in. Why don't you go there and help those people to build that up then, if that's what you want?
Yeah, I would change that. They don't want to run things. They want to own things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's fundamentally a different thing because they would be quite happy for us to continue running it all as long as they owned it and we were and they owned us.
That's right.
It's just disgusting. I hate it so much. It makes me so angry.
Yeah, it's like, where can we go? Where can we go to get away from this? I've been to Australia. I've been to Canada. I've been to every white country, and it's happening in every white country, every corner that we live, every small town that we live. So where can we go where we can just be ourselves with the people that we want to be with? Where?
Even Finland, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, another thing, as you say, even the small towns, Twin Peaks, they're making the third series now. I don't know if you're familiar with this. It's an early 90s series. The last series was made in 1990, I think, 91.
Oh yeah, I remember it.
Now, what's so wonderful about Twin Peaks is that I think there are about 25 episodes, and there's only one black person in the entire thing. And it's only he only appears in one episode, and that's it. to be fair, he's a high-up FBI official. But still, he's there. And it's only one character in one episode. There's a Chinese woman, interestingly done, actually. It's quite good. And she's a regular character. Apart from that, I don't think there is any diversity in Twin Peaks. Oh. So it's a wonderfully, you know, I get the same pleasure from that I get from watching 1970s British TV. It's all white.
Well, what I've noticed is that usually when it's about dysfunctional people, it's all whites.
Well, but to be fair, I mean, Twin Peaks is a very complex program. I mean, it's a huge cast. You see it in the pilot episode that they're introducing one character after another. It's very efficiently done, actually. But anyway, what I was going to say was the third series is being made now, and I saw one comment, and this is when you realize that as a right-winger or as a nationalist, you might like something for totally different reasons from the ones that everyone else likes it for, you know?
Right.
I saw this comment. This person was saying, oh, I can't wait to see this new series. And I hope they have a more diverse cast this time.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
So this quaint white American town, this rural town, which is an idyll, it's wonderful. It's, you know, it's the kind of thing I'd love to visit a place like that, even live there maybe. I might be able to give up my attachment to Britain if it meant living in Twin Peaks. but, you know, it's touching. And you think, surely that is something that's something beautiful. It's something to celebrate. And this liberal, who's also a fan of the series, sees that as something that's awful. It's something to change. It's a defect. It's a flaw. And the town must be made more diverse. That would be better. It would be better if they weren't all white. You know, that's something that when he watches that, or she, I can't remember, when she watches this program, she is irked by the whiteness. She's irritated by it. She's troubled by it. You know, it's like a learned allergy.
It's called hate. They hate.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of this new god-awful show. We started watching it, Lana, about the, The Man in the High Castle, right?
Oh,
right.
The
Nazis, what if they won, right? And it was funny because it's like this, there was this, the producers of the TV show they started this hashtag on Twitter, what if we lost, I think it was, right? But they did it together with this image that showed this white, wholesome family, right? And it's like in a suburban area. It was like all peaceful behind there. It wasn't any crime or anything like that. It was like,
it's great.
And it was like, apparently they started to get like actually positive responses to this image, right? But it was, it was supposed to send you chills down your spine because it was like only white people.
They overestimated how far the conditioning had gone. They thought that people would see that and just get the creeps. In fact, people see it and, you know, get warm feelies. They think,
that's nice. Yeah, exactly. I mean, but this is what it's come to. I mean, on the banner, on the image, the man has a swastika on a bandana or like on a armband around his whatever. Yeah. But you know, nonetheless,
it'd be funny if it was a bandana.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. that'd be awesome. No, it wouldn't. But yeah. So anyway, my point is, it's like this is what it's come to. That it means that a white wholesome family just living
just
a good
dinner,
life and being traditional, whatever. That is what the problem is. It's always been that, of course. We know that now. But to people who this might dawn upon, who said, well, no, it's a problem. They thought this, or they were racist, or they blah, blah, blah. But they try to justify it. But it's basically like, it doesn't matter what they actually were thinking or what they were like or anything. The problem is that they're just there, and they're white, and are having a good time together. You know, that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, my friend Pale Hominid has been he's got a channel called Pale Hominid. He's been reading a Stephen King book. I think it's set in the 50s, and it's a time traveler. You know, today's liberal has gone back to the 1950s in America. And it's hilarious because Stephen King can't bring himself. On the one hand, he absolutely has this intense nostalgia for America of the 50s. And how law-abiding and open and honest everyone was, cooperative, helpful. He loves that, but then he's got to say the stuff about how awful the racism was. So he can't bring himself to see it was this cohesive, successful, prosperous society because white people had this solidarity. You can't have one without the other.
Oh, yeah. I see, too, in a lot of the 50s movies that they do here, they have to demonize the patriarchy. All these men were just so wicked, you know. These women, they had it so horrible. They were well-kept and could stay home and take care of their children, and they had food and a nice house. It's just so horrible, right? The streets are too clean. It's just demonizing men over and over. And I've seen just like a whole slew of bullshit feminist propaganda movies coming out, a lot of like old time period pieces too, where they show these, you know, white guys with these weird like sexual fetishes, and they just like want to own women. It's just like an onslaught of that right now.
Yeah. I mean, at least with Stephen King, he has, I mean, the premise is that the guy is from 2015. He's a time traveler. With a lot of the things that the BBC does now, the historical ones, they have a character who's from, let's say, 1910. And it's set in 1910, and the character is from there, and yet they have all the attitudes of a woman in 2015.
Exactly. That's just it. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Well, they didn't know anything else. See, this is the thing. We were watching something yesterday, and I forget exactly what it was, but it was like this British in the late 1700s or something, and it was like, you know, the men were like discussing ownership, and it was, you know, over a woman or whatever. It was like, it's like the legal framework of how all these things came together, which eventually even became like human rights and all this kind of stuff, that wasn't like even in place. So they take their 2015 mentality and try to superimpose that on a late 1700s mentality and say, see what like utter ruthless monsters these men were of talking about it in this term. So it was like they were just developing a legal system to try to understand where they were going with this.
Yeah, like, and I was looking at this, like, nice houses and nice dresses and nice carriages, thinking, oh yeah, you poor thing. It was just so hard for you in the patriarchy, you baby. And then it's like, the other thing is like, these women that put that time period down, it's like, these are your great, 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 great grandfathers. You know, these are your ancestors that you're slamming and putting down here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they have this detachment because there's no such thing as the white race. So, you know, we're all individuals and, you know, but yeah, it's amazing how they have this disinterest or myopia about anything other than 2015 current year liberalism. You know, everything else has just been bad.
Yeah.
As long as if it was white. And so they don't care about whether this conversation could ever really have taken place in 1910 or 1820 or something. They don't care if it's plausible. They can only look at the world through their own progressive mindset, through their own progressive glasses. And there's an inability to put themselves in another situation which is quite typical, but it's not what you expect of a creative writer. You know, they should be able to sympathize with, to understand a character in a different culture and a different society. That's, after all, what they keep telling us that is the benefit of diversity. But they can't stand this sort of diversity. You know, they've got to pretend that, well, see, that's actually the same contradiction that you see with diversity, isn't it? That they pretend that we're all different and that's great and all that. But then they say, but we're all the same, really.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Schizophrenic, you know. But it's like, that's evidence too, you know, that we know this, but, you know, the writers and all this, I don't think it is because they're not talented. It's because this is a tool, a weapon, a mechanism they use to condition us and mind control us into believing this nonsense they're pushing on us, you know?
Yeah, it was always like this. Women always wanted the vote, and they always wanted equality, and they always wanted abortion. And they were always bothered by, you know, mansplaining.
Well, basically, too, it's just been like a few spinsters who, like, couldn't get a man. They had to ruin it for everyone else because before it was one house was united and they voted. I'm sorry, but I want to have the same vote as my husband. And if I don't, I don't want to be married to this person, you
know?
All rigged around the family. It wasn't some great conspiracy to hold women down. People just totally take it out of context for that era.
It's disappointing, you know. I just wish that, I mean, TV drama is one of my loves. It's one of these things I really care about, and I just wish it was done much better, much, much better, because it should be, and it used to be. It used to be done a lot.
Well, I think it can be made better, and I think there's a both a need and a hunger for that, and I think it's, frankly, it's up to people like us to push in the direction of influencing people to do it right. I mean, do something online. A drama like that doesn't have to be a huge production. You could do something fairly simple with a talented writer, a couple of actors, and maybe some, you know, a little bit of a scene and a little bit of a display kind of thing. But
I could rave and rant. You know, honestly, I could go on and on about this for hours because I love low budget drama. This is for, like, TV in the 70s was very low budget. That's its strength. That's exactly why it is what it is. That's its character.
Yeah,
it's not Game of Thrones, but it's not trying to be. It's something very simple. It's a well-written script with two very good, well-trained, classically trained, and extremely well-spoken actors who had great diction. It's just fantastic to listen to. And so it's simplicity. And therefore, because the script is good and the acting is good, you don't need anything else. You don't need anything else. You don't need an explosion and a huge fight scene and CGI and a car chase.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. That's for the teenage boys, you know? Proper adults should be interested in better things than that. It's embarrassing when I have, you know, I end up in conversations with some of my friends and they're talking about kung fu movies. And I'm thinking, for heaven's sake, you know, you're 35. Aren't you interested in something more deep than that, more dignified? It's just another aspect of cultural decline, unfortunately. Yeah, there are so many.
Yeah, there are. They're in arrested development. They're kids, many of these people, growing up these days.
Indeed, they are. But the upside of this is that it will not be difficult for us to make good dramas. When the time comes for us to do that, and where some of us are doing that, we're not going to make Game of Thrones. We're going to make something like Of Mice and Men, something of that scale. And or even smaller,
or just comedy, making fun of all these libtards because it's so easy to do.
Yeah, it could be just two people in a room having a conversation that everyone recognizes.
I think those kinds of things are going to go over once it gets out there. Once it gets, like, people know about it, I think it's going to go down so well. It's going to completely catch all these, you know, new degenerate, like, outlets like Amazon and Netflix who started to produce their own now. It's funny because initially I thought, oh, cool, maybe they can do something different.
No.
And it's like they're even worse in some cases than a mainstream TV is. I guess this Man in the High Castle is evidence of that too. It's through Amazon,
yeah.
I think. So.
Yeah.
I've also heard terrible things about Amazon's House of Cards.
Oh, yeah, it's a horrible. We watched a couple of those and it's just like, it's the same old nonsense and garbage of, like, these, you know, this horrible, ruthless Republican.
It's always
just, like,
predictable. we know what all their scripts are. It's just really predictable and contrived.
Yeah. The original British series is very, very good. It's actually a really good series. But the I mean, I haven't bothered watching. I don't watch TV anymore. And occasionally I watch Doctor Who, and I just regret it every time. You know, something reels me in, like, oh, it's a Dalek story or something. But then I think, oh, this was bloody awful.
Yeah. They're ruining it. They're taking these old shows that were great as they were and whatnot and trying to bring it up into the current year.
Yeah, right? Didn't they add some vibrancy to Doctor Who?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the relationships have tended to be mixed race, every one of them.
Wow.
I can think of three off the top of my head. I think there are more. And there are certainly lots of, I mean, in this latest series that's being broadcast now, the number of ethnic minority actors is astonishing. Absolutely amazing. It's no way is it realistic. It's not representing Britain in 2015. I mean, I know it's an alien world or whatever. It's in the future. It doesn't matter. You would think it would be, you know, the rationale is, oh, we've got to represent Britain as it is today. And the people in front of the camera should be the same as the people watching. But it's way, way over that. I mean, it's like 50% of the actors are non-white. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Not surprised.
Yeah. So it's just infuriating. But this is the sort of thing that is inevitable, and it will alienate the white kid at school. And
right, exactly.
Yeah. An event, we just have to make that work in our favor.
I would think these TV shows would fail too, because, you know, if they diversify with, let's say, lots of blacks, Mexicans aren't going to watch that show, Arabs aren't going to watch that show, Asians aren't going to watch that show, you know. Generally, yeah. People around the world they're used to watching white people. And for people in Asia, and I know because I've been around there, they're intrigued by white people because it's so different than what they have there, because we are a world's minority. We are the people of color. We have more diversity, and so people are intrigued to see us on the screen, you know.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's very easy to forget that.
Yeah, exactly. And the point that we're the world's minorities, that needs to be hammered over and over and over again, because we're being told constantly that somehow we're in charge, we're dominating the whole planet, or we're dominating the whole scene. It's like, no, it's on a small area comparatively now on the globe in Europe, and sure, there's many whites in America and Australia too, but point is that all those countries that have been built by Europeans are being invaded, they're being overrun, we are being sought to become minorities in our own countries. And I mean, on the scale of things, if you compare it, we are the ones who should have special protection for being minorities compared to some of these people that are coming into our country. Swedes is a minority. Norwegians and Danes, those are very few people in this world.
I mean, I've actually heard a girl wrote me, an actress. She's a really pretty girl, listens to my show. And she said that a casting director told her that she was common. Okay, she had blonde hair naturally, blue eyes, gorgeous. Told that she was common and that they wanted something more ethnic. It's like, okay, since when is Swedish not an ethnicity or Danish not an ethnicity?
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I had another girl write who listens, also another beautiful girl, natural blonde, blue eyes, and she said, thank you so much for your show and you've taught me so much, and I used to think I needed to be more exotic. She actually used that word, you know.
Oh, man.
It just makes it makes me livid, because these are like good stock women. There's something special in the world and they're being told that they're common.
Yeah, mind control, utter programming. These young women.
And these are the girls that will go marry a non-white and have a bunch of kids that aren't blonde and blue eyes.
Just to prove how good they are, right? And to prove to everyone else that, well, I'm not one of those people, you know. And just this idea that they don't know, they don't understand that there's like this woman is like thousands of years in the making, you know, and this will be destroyed. So even this contradiction again within the left, of like, they love to see, you know, the mixed up couples, right? Well, guess what? That only happens one time.
Yeah.
And then that's gone.
Yeah.
This mix up of what you love to see is going to, we're all going to look the same at the end of the day if everyone did this, and it wouldn't take many generations either. And then there literally wouldn't be any diversity. So it's anti-diversity.
Yeah.
I recently did a talk with a man who grew up in Brazil, and he was talking about this, and it was quite disturbing, actually. I mean, the way he described Brazil, I won't go into it here, but one of the main things was this total sort of lack of identity because there are no pure people. You know, he said that after one generation, nobody is pure of one race. It's all mixed up and chaotic and haphazard, and nobody has an identity as a result.
Horrible. What is it?
It's horrible.
Wasn't he talking to you about? I know others at least have talked about how. Also, there is a tremendous amount of racial tension in those kinds of societies, right? That there's even internal little conflicts. And I mean, you spoke about this, Lana. You've heard you talk with some of them, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
There's still lots of crime there, and they still compete over, you know, who's the whitest there. And those are the ones that are still oppressing.
That's
people.
Tragic.
And
yeah. That's really tragic.
High crime, lots of crime. Yeah, well, also in the 1900s, their government actually implemented a policy called racial whitening. So what they did is they brought in thousands of white Europeans from Europe, hoping that they would actually intermarry with the local population as a means to bring equality. So, yeah, look at Brazil to see how that turned out.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And of course, they've had successive waves of immigration since then. So,
yeah.
It's a disaster.
Well, it's what I just don't understand with all this is that it's a live experiment. It's a Europe is turning into a petri dish for like social engineering and biological experiments of trying to meddle with things which nature has ultimately ensured into existence, right? And we think that we can, due to some political stupid naive reasons, make this go away, or that somehow it's a problem. But just this concept of how white people are targeted uniquely for being somehow, you know, worse than everyone else, or they're held to a different kind of standard of just how open people can be these days of seeing like too many white people and saying, oh my God, like that's disgusting, you know, stuff like that. That it's like somehow it's something wrong with white people. That somehow,
oh yeah,
you know, too many of us in a row. That's a microaggression, and people will feel uncomfortable if there's too many white people that are in one area. I mean, that's
hideous. That's really. A horrible, and it's true that is something that is prevalent. This idea that white people inherently, as soon as you've got too many of them, there's something bad about that, something evil about that. I find that very disturbing.
It's truly extraordinary. Hey guys, I think we should round up in a little bit here. It's been great having you with us, Millennial Woes, and also Lana. Thank you for joining us. I want to see, of course, if there's anything else you guys want to add to this discussion. Maybe some final thoughts or closing ideas on what we've been talking about. I do want to ask you, obviously, about your channel a little bit too, so you can let people know where to. Where to go to find out your videos. If you want to tell us a little bit about, maybe what you have upcoming or why you started the channel, please feel free to share with us what you want regarding your project.
Well, thank you. I started the channel nearly 2 years ago. And at the time, I only intended to make about 20 videos. I didn't think it would be that big a thing. It was quite just a hobby. And... well, quickly, I just dived into it. I became almost addicted, I suppose. I realized that I took to the format very quickly, and I think I've now made about 700 videos, so of many different subjects. As time goes on, I have to admit that I have become fixated on the race issue. And I'm not ashamed of that. It's just that I used to do stuff about other ideas, other things as well. And I think there'll be more of that in the future. But for now, the main thing is race and Islam, immigration, multiculturalism, etc.
How can you not look at that these times?
Indeed,
you know?
It's just so important. It's the main issue. And I mean, everything else is just either trivial or it's connected to that. It's a result of it. So I think it does require a lot of study and thought. The channel... it's grown into a community. There are a lot of regular commenters. I want to expand it into a website next year, although I'm not sure. It's always dangerous to make statements like that in advance. just now, I've been making a series about the Rotherham rape scandal in Britain. I'm planning to make, it's going to end up being about 120 videos on that. And it's a huge project. The scandal itself, I think, easily justifies that number. And it's not the same thing over and over again. It's each video is examining a different aspect of it, a different aspect of the scandal and the various groups involved, because it is a very complex thing. It's you've got the whites, the working class whites, the girls themselves, and the community that they're from. You've got the Pakistanis, you've got the police, you've got the Labour Party, the council, the social services, and the Pakistanis. I think I said that already. So there are these different groups, and each of them has its own motivations and qualities. So there's a huge amount in it, and I think that the Rotherham scandal sort of embodies what is wrong with the West. There are so many lessons to be drawn from it. So I think it merits a lot of study.
Story. I mean, it's really the story of the, should be the story of the decade, you know?
Yeah, it sums up so many things, yeah. And embodies the sickness that is at the heart of, well, the sickness in the Western soul, let's say. And because when you've got a white society working against the whites and the most vulnerable whites, that is profoundly wrong. There's something profoundly wrong there. So why does it happen? Why is it happening? And that's what I'm trying to investigate. And it covers all sorts of things: psychology, history, culture, genetics, religion, and politics. So that I, you know, all sorts of things that I'm interested in, and that I've built the channel around. So that's what I do. That's Millennial Woes.
Awesome. Yeah, I've definitely been looking forward to the Rotherham series as well. I watched the history part already, really enjoyed it. I recommend people take a look at that. And know how long it takes
you.
To. Yeah, definitely. You bet. And I know how long it takes to, you know, to produce certain videos as well. I have also done that. We have so many different projects and so many different videos in the works, and it does take a long time pulling it all together. So I definitely hope you do more, but I know how time consuming it is to do it, you know? So,
yeah, I think that the other problem is when you're working on your own, it's very easy to get overwhelmed psychologically, and you feel like, oh, there's so much here. And you, I mean, this is the period I'm going through just now with the Rotherham series. It's such a big undertaking that I feel overwhelmed with it. And I also feel, not to be arrogant, but I think I've set a new standard in terms of the quality of the videos with the Rotherham series. It's called The Rot, incidentally. That's the name I gave it. And very apt name.
Yep.
So I feel that there are expectations. That I think there have been about 20 videos put up at this stage. And I feel that there are, people are expecting each video to be as good as the last one. And so that's intimidating. But I will get over it. It just takes time. Also, frankly, you need a break. You need to recharge. And in the meantime, since I made the last Rotherham video, numerous things have happened. The migrant crisis has started. And then this terrorist attack. So, I mean, that's the thing. There are always so many things to talk about, even in just current affairs, let alone history, psychology. This is what's so great about the Reactosphere, or the alt-right, let's call it. This is a new lens through which to look at many things that have been looked at before, but never through this lens. And so there is a lot to do, a huge amount to do. And I think next year, 2016, is going to be really explosive for the alt-right, because there are more and more people joining. There are more and more people finding it. And we are getting more organized and sophisticated. So I think it's going to be a fantastic year next year.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of things that are brewing on so many different levels. And just also the fact that people's experiences, what they experience right in front of their eyes, is that's really what it is drawing people, you know, to look outside of that box. They realize that the image that the media is presenting, the reality they're trying to kind of impose on us, just doesn't match with the experiences that we're having. So people what I'm saying is that they, the establishment, the politicians, the whole apparatus that's in place, is largely doing the majority of the job for us. They're driving people away from themselves due to their idiotic policies and their stupid decisions. Which is something which is excellent for us, something we should jump on and take that opportunity and show that there's a different way of doing things. So your channel is kind of part really of doing the the ongoing, you know, commentary and analysis to both the insanity, but also some of the hopes that we do have in these times of what we can
Indeed.
Do. Yeah.
When I first started the channel, I was still quite depressed. I mean, I'd gone through a period of depression, and starting the channel was part of recovering from that. That's 2 years ago, and nowadays I feel a lot stronger and more upbeat. And frankly, I'm a bit sick of moaning. I want to move forward and start building and start being more of a man, frankly. And I think a lot of guys are like that. I think a lot of us are feeling that way. So yeah, I think that's really what I'm talking about with 2016. I think we're going to see the emergence of a more structured alt-right. And that's going to be great.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Very, very well. Now, tell our folks listening to how they can, if they want to get in touch with you. I know that you have an ability so people can help you and support you so that you can continue doing the videos on a regular basis. And of course, I'd love to see people like yourselves and many others to expand out to the level where they basically can afford to produce more content, produce more videos, and become actively of a media themselves. Tell us a bit how people can help you out and if they can get in touch with you.
Well, I like to have all communication going through Skype now. So that's my preferred method. If you want to friend me on Skype, it's just Millennial Woes. Millennial has two N's. People often get that wrong, but just do a search and I'm there. And I'm sure that that will be linked under this show in the show notes. So that's Skype, or you can email me millennialwoes@gmail.com. And then there's the YouTube channel itself. And there's the Facebook page, and there's the Twitter page, and there's the Ask FM page, and there's the Patreon page as well. So, you know, I do have a fair presence nowadays online. It's what you've just got to do, isn't it? It's what everyone does now. but yeah, if you want to get in touch, either email or Skype. And also I do put up a lot of Skype recordings on my channel with different people, and they do require a lot of editing. So if you are good at editing audio, and if you'd like to help do that, please get in touch.
Very, very good. We'll have the links up, folks. You can just click through easily from our site as well. Well, let me switch over to you, Lana, before we ask Mr. Woes if there's anything else he wants to add on to it. Anything else you want to say about everything we've been talking about today? Any last thoughts on maybe words of encouragement to our audience?
Yeah, I'm encouraged with what I see and the people that we've been meeting and people that have been contacting me. Like I said at the MPI conference, a lot of women are coming out of the woodwork, a lot of intelligent, beautiful young women. So I'm very encouraged by that. I think we'll be coaxing more of them out, you know. Also, I just want to say, I think it's good that I see a confidence emerging, people that aren't feeling this guilt and this shame and are holding their head high. There's nothing wrong with a bunch of white people getting together, being in a room together, and we need to just keep exuding that confidence and have that inner confidence to combat all the bad energy coming. I think that's really important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we need to just start just doing it quite blasé, quite casually. Yeah, I prefer being with white people, deal with it.
Yeah, kind of be arrogant about it and just not care. And actually, other people respond to that confidence. It's when you're weak and you appear weak that they come in for the kill.
Yeah.
Well, indeed. You know, it's not that we need that justification, far from it. I don't care about equality or that it has to be same for everybody. But I mean, come on, let's be honest. This is something that comes natural to any other people, any other race, any other group, to do what we want to have done. We're the only group you can't openly support or be proactively engaged in. And then that's
all we
hypocrisy.
Want, yeah. All we want is to be among people who are like us and to preserve the greatest civilization on Earth. I really don't see what's so wrong or evil about that. It means being a bit elitist. It means keeping certain outsiders out all the time. It means keeping other outsiders out most of the time. But, you know, big deal. I'm sorry, that's just life. I can't go and announce to everyone that I'm now Chinese or Pakistani or whatever. So why should they be allowed to? I mean, this is just common sense. I do not. I'm just going to say this. I say this on the channel all the time. I don't hate anyone. And it really annoys me that our position is equated with hate, because I don't see it that way at all. I see this very much as just a natural thing. And in some cases, it's a real love for whites, for the white race. So it's not hate. If anything, it's love. And I'm not ashamed. I don't think that any of us should be ashamed. This is just survival.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't hate anybody either for something they haven't done. I hate people for their behavior. I think we've become scared of hate too. I think Kai Murrows has this really good video on hate, about how it's unique as a human emotion, and it's something that's part of us as a makeup. It's partially there as a kind of a survival mechanism. So I'm not going to throw it out the window, but I definitely agree with what you're saying, Mr. Wolves. You know, it's like it's not driven for a resentment of the other. It's driven by love for us, for who we are. And that's Indeed. Really what this is all about. It's not about everyone else, or it's not about what they do or whatever. Yeah. It's about what we do and how we want to move forward, and for us to both secure a position on this planet as everyone else, have a be influential in our own countries that our ancestors set up, and be a position where we have control of our own destiny again, yeah. because we don't right now.
Just one more thing I'd like to say, based on what you just said. We need to get into a position where we're talking about what's right for us, and we're thinking about the world through the lens of the white race. And I think we have to not be ashamed of that. We have to stop thinking about other races, and, oh, how's this going to affect them? That is a consideration, but also we are a consideration. And we have agency, we have primacy, we have importance, we deserve to live, we deserve to survive as a race, as a group, as a culture, a society, a civilization. And one other thing I'd like to say, it has always been like that. The whole diversity thing is ultimately a white thing, and we've just been deluded about this. I don't think, I think that a lot of liberals, progressives, don't really care about the other as much as they pretend to, as much as they claim to. This is ultimately a game that white people are playing with themselves, and we've just got to stop playing this game, because it's destroying us.
Absolutely. Well said. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Wolves. Appreciate your time today. Keep up the good work, and would be great to have you back in the future again sometime.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on the show.
You bet. And thank you, Lana, as well.
See ya.
See ya. Thank you very much.
We'll have more coming on the Paris attacks in just a few days. We are going to talk with Guillaume Fay and also Patrick Lebrun when we get a chance for some more in-depth analysis from a French perspective and from someone who's more familiar with French society to get a better understanding of what impact this will have and how this will change things in the future for France. So stay tuned to Red Ice Radio. The website is redicecreations.com. And if you want to hear more of what we do and catch the full show, please sign up for a membership. The website is redicemembers.com, where we have everything archived going back to our start in 2006. Well, thank you for listening today. Always a pleasure to have you with us. And don't forget to stay safe, prepare, organize, and tell your friends and family about what kind of world we are heading towards as well. You know, plant those seeds, help to wake them up. Who knows? It might help them to see the naivety and delusion that many people live under as well. It might just save their lives. Who knows? All right, we'll be back in just a few days again. Take care. We'll talk to you later.
Oh, what a car in Vienna, Diamond.